In the days of old, when a blacksmith used to hammer horseshoes against an anvil with a rhythmic smash of his hammer, he would pause and put the horseshoe back into a furnace. The horseshoe would go from dark red to a brilliant white. And you can imagine that blacksmith withdrawing the horseshoe from the fire, holding it up into the night sky, and against the night sky he would see stars, his horseshoe and stars. And both those objects, his horseshoe and the star, are emitting a particular type of radiation called a thermal or black body radiation, or thermal radiation, governed by the laws of statistics. And I've discussed previously in podcasts the three equations of thermal radiation or black body radiation. That's the wavelength times the temperature is a constant, Wien's law, Stefan's law, which is the amount of power given out is proportional to the fourth power of the temperature. So if you increase the temperature by a factor of 10, you increase the amount of watts produced by what you've heated up by a factor of 10,000. And finally, the last formula, which gives you the detail of colour, an exquisite detail, Planck's formula, which, roughly speaking, is the frequency cubed into a factor which is 1 on e to the minus, roughly speaking, the frequency on the temperature, minus 1. And that formula there is what we're going to talk about today. And previously, I've talked further. The last podcast has been whether Max Planck was a Nazi. One of those things, he was a German in that Nazi era. Mrs. Pithill explains where I discuss things scientific. Now, one of the things with my explanations is I try not to actually introduce any of my own research on it. I just try and actually communicate the raw, genuine research across to try and explain what people are attempting and failing to explain today. But I will stop and try and explain the angst that I find, and whether the angst that we see in earlier times is actually alive and well today. So in Max Planck's, I described, I had four levels of people: the literal level, the A grade people, the B, the people who believed or understood equations, the multi-level people like Einstein, the C level, and I had D, just arbitrarily D, as a level of people who used computers to simulate the world. Just breaking them up and to explain that asking whether someone was a particular belief or not is that digital mechanical view of the world, its label view of the world in that A group, and saying, look, that is the world that Max Planck compromised himself to try and explain and communicate and get some ideas across, and we tend to have a labeling system like that. I'm not explaining this too well, but I'm saying that this type of I suppose power control, your consensus by who a belief being true if the king or the most powerful people believe it, is an A grade, an A style form of thinking. And of course, Max Planck was a very careful formula thinking, and he came up with his formula. And I'm just going to go in and describe the formula to you. It's a fairly simple thing. I'm not going to confuse you by mentioning the mistakes. I will mention the a couple of typical mistakes that I've seen in the internet, in diagrams, and indeed in people's teaching. And of course, it's one of those things. I'll give another commentary on people's self-assessment, that if they don't understand something, they tend to rate themselves as good at something. It's something which we've noted again, more familiarly, that people all rate themselves above average drivers. And there's a famous study in the 50s where people went to a ward, and when people recovered consciousness from a dreadful accident they caused, they asked them, how do you rate yourself as a driver? And they all rated themselves as very good. On a similar vein, people tend to rate themselves as very good explainers of Planck's and physics and stuff like that, yet the evidence is manifestly there, not there, in terms that there's mistakes in what they say. So let's go to it now. We've got, I call it omega or mu. Omega is the angular frequency and mu is just the frequency. Mu is sort of like a cursive V shaped. And we start off with the very early theory saying that just roughly, heuristically, things should, the intensity of light with frequency, the intensity as you increase the frequency, the intensity and frequency should grow as mu, or the frequency squared, the frequency times the frequency. And indeed, when they measured that, that was correct. And if they just left it alone, the amount of light coming out would increase more with more frequency. So if you just said that law applies, you'd have, as you went to blue light, there'd be more blue light. And as you went to ultraviolet light, there'd be more ultraviolet light. And as you went to X-rays, which is a very high frequency, there'd be even more light. This simple that the amount of light as a function of frequency is just the frequency squared. And this led to what people in textbooks have sort of reconstructed historically to a problem called the ultraviolet catastrophe. This is a problem of a formula being applied without end leads to infinite power. So if I heat up a horseshoe, that horseshoe emits infinite power, which was incorrect. And then Max Planck carefully did a lot of measurements and actually began to fit a curve, and he found empirically the following formula worked. And I'm leaving out a lot of the constants and the various things, and E, which we're going to use the formula, is 2.71 something rather. It's a number, and instead of using E, I'm going to say 2.71. There you go. Rather than write E, it's sort of like pi. I could write pi, or I could simplify it. If you didn't know what pi, the symbol pi was, if I put 3.141, or this, I'll have to see if I can memorize it. If I think about it, I can get pi to a couple of decimal places, again with E. But going back to Planck's data, I don't know necessarily he took it, but what would happen is that you'd have a spectrometer, which would peel off a certain colour of light. And so you, for different colours of light, you could see the amount of power put out. So if something was cold, it wouldn't put out very much blue light. But if it got very hot, it would put out more blue light than the cold red light. So you could compare the two and actually see the amount of power being put out of it through this device called a prism or a spectrometer and a power meter. And so this graph you get, which is the intensity of light versus the wavelength, and we can convert that wavelength into frequency. There's sort of a little bit of maths involved in doing that. However, you could just substitute it, because if you know the wavelengths, you know the frequency. It's really one and same number, because frequency and wavelength of light is given by a simple relationship, that the frequency times the wavelength equals the speed of light. This is something you have to do and understand in wave physics or wave science. You'll eventually get into it. So we've got the Planck said as a more sophisticated understanding that we have this term, which he's added to, and I'm going to make it actually rather simple here. He said we'll start off with the frequency squared, and we'll add another term to it, which is the frequency over one the frequency over 2.7 to the frequency on the temperature with a few factors put in, minus one. If we put in that factor, when it comes down to it, goes as frequency goes to one or zero, very low frequency, that goes to one. But as it expands, three to the power of frequency on the temperature, just putting it very likely. So you're not focusing on the numbers, you're looking at the nature of the equation. That goes to infinity, or one on infinity, which goes to zero. So I add to my a squared function, a frequency squared function, another function of frequency, which goes from one at low frequency to zero at high frequency. So we get that tail off, this high frequency tail off. And if you do all the when you differentiate this function to see where it's the maximum, indeed you find that the frequency times the temperature is the maximum. Or if you integrate this to look at the total power, the integral is indeed proportional to t to the fourth. So this is sort of like the dual equation, and the other two equations, this is Wien's law and Stefan's equation, are sort of like quartiers to it. They're results from it. So this is a very strong equation for a number of reasons. One, it was an exact experimental fit. Two, the other equations fitted into it, all our knowledge fitted into it. So this was definitely, if you'd like, the direction to go. And Max Planck had the experimental stuff and began to actually work out how you got them. So people have previously worked out the frequency squared part, and we'll just go to the frequency squared part and say that you can restrict an antenna to have. So antennas are things which, by definition, produce light. So something which produces light is, by definition, an antenna. So it's one of those things with an antenna. If you restrict it to a certain boundary condition to have certain wavelengths, so it can have a wavelength, half the actual start off with double. It's of the length of the antenna, so it's a up and down. It's got a node at the start and finish, and then it continues again. You'll have to draw this out. You've got a half and a one. It oscillates between the two. It's a bit like hitting a chime. You'll hear different distinct notes because it hit by boundary conditions, and go all the way through. You can get an infinite number of boundary conditions. That restriction gives you a restriction on the number of possible momentum states. So rather than a continuous range of frequency, we're going to have to tell you a few things that H on P equals lambda, or H on lambda equals P, or the momentum. So wavelength and momentum are all stuck together. We're going to have to start doing quantum mechanics. Another quick way of doing it is going to the final conclusion, rather than working through what Planck did, and say the Heisenberg uncertainty principle gives you H, the uncertainty in momentum and space is greater than H or H bar, depending on how you formulate it. This essentially means that if you describe all the possible energy states in an object, you get a sphere, ever growing sphere, where the momentum can be in the x and y, z, or the wavelength can be in the x, y, and z dimensions. And so, if you can imagine a axis where there's a little point at every integer point, that's in momentum space of the actual radiator. Now, I just have to stop here. One of the things I see in textbooks is that people say the actual cavity is holds radiation. When you actually look at Planck actually looked at a small unit of the cavity wall, and so it's somehow in the textbooks people want to say cavity in a box, and I've got a box radiator, and they skip past how Planck actually formulated it. If you can imagine in space the XYZ coordinate and a little point filling in at the origin at every point along the axis, and in every point in between, so at 111, at 222, at 123, at 321, all those little points XYZ of those origins are little allowed momentum states, and they're all the momentum states possible in an object. And that the smaller the object is, the greater the spacing to is this floating three-dimensional array of points. This is a podcast. I'm trying to explain something which is done in a diagram. So if you've done the lecture before, you've had it before, it'll probably be easier to imagine. Now, of course, we're interested in the energy at each wavelength, possible wavelength state. And the energy is given by momentum squared, which is one aspect, which is the frequency. The energy is given by the frequency. So the number of states in any particular frequency band there, at any point there, is a sphere distance of a frequency distance out from the origin. And the surface area of that sphere will be the number of points equal to the number of points of that energy. So population of potential radiated states or antenna, the number of antenna produce a particular light at a particular frequency is proportional to the frequency squared. So that gets you to the frequency squared, that very first term. Understanding that the additional term that Planck added must therefore be a probability term. I've got the antenna. How often is that antenna switched on? So if you imagine you've got a whole group of people singing, and you've got a baritone singing deep, and then you've got two people singing at the next term, and three people singing at the next high frequency, and so on until you've eventually got 50 people singing at the very highest frequency, and you listen, and the highest frequency is not as loud, it's beginning to disappear. And the answer is that although you've got the seats to those people at singing at the high frequency, they're not actually occupied. The people haven't turned up. The high frequency people have a lower probability of turning up. And the probability of them turning up is this mystery term, frequency into 1 on 2.7 to the frequency on the temperature plus or multiplied by some other terms to make it that the correct ratio to plug in there, minus 1. And that's our probability term. And the basic units of those factors put in that Planck had to put in was called was energy times time. And so that's the that is the unit of energy times time is the unit of action. So he said this constant H is a quantum of action, and that it meant that the actual generation of frequency of the oscillators were quantized. Now, indeed, they are quantized in momentum space, and it means that light is produced at a different number of quanta. This is any light produced is in its transition is quantized. So the transition is quantized. And again, you may see in various syllabuses, depending on their quality, like the New South Wales syllabus is one of these. It says that the energy of light in a black body is quantized, and that's incorrect. The actual transition between energy states has a quantized angular momentum. That's actually what it is in terms of quantum physics. It's just very poorly expressed and actually incorrect in the New South Wales secondary school's syllabus. It's a thing which the people really haven't understood or haven't read Einstein's papers getting into it. And so Einstein said that this other term, so remember that it's frequency cubed into 1 on 1 over all of this, which is 2.7 to the frequency on the temperature, then minus 1. He said that last term, which is just the frequency times that, that is the probability term. That's the probability for when you're looking at people turning up or states going to be radiating in a particular state. That's the probability of that state being there. And then he had an explanation that the probability of being a state reduces. It tends to vacate a state due to the energy of the state or the frequency of the state. So that gave you that frequency term. The other term, which is the exponential term, is the statistics of the fundamental particle of light. It's called a Bose-Einstein statistics, and it's called that light's a boson and obeys this statistics, which put together is the statistics which goes from when the frequency is essentially 0 to 1, and as the frequency increases, it descends to 0. And so it's sort of like a circular argument, so to speak. But you can read the Einstein's paper. Now, there's a sort of a boom with this. So if you can look at it, there's a temptation to, when you see a frequency cube term, to say, well, that's a single term, but it's actually a composite term, a frequency squared times a frequency, and that frequency term is linked with the Bose-Einstein statistics. And so that gives you that term. The consequence of Einstein labouring through and explaining Planck's equation is that he actually then said, well, this the Planck's equation is for something called spontaneous emission, that this frequency term is sort of like a self-energy term, and it's sort of a natural spontaneous emission. And then, of course, he said, look, you can have another type of emission, which is due to the imposed electric field on an antenna, which is simply what we get from when we power up an antenna. It produces light, and when light hits an antenna, or the radio waves hits an antenna, we get energy out of it that is stimulated emission and absorption. So when the real genius is Einstein generalizing the equations to produce a cluster of Einstein's equations, as they're called, which include Planck's equation, the equation for absorption, and the laser equation getting into it. Now I'll stop and mention a few things which I've seen. So I've seen in the on the internet a number of diagrams where they write the Planck's equation, but with not a frequency cubed, a frequency squared term, simply because they've become confused, not knowing that there's another frequency term in the Einstein equation. So if you go on the internet and you look at a few of these Planck's equations, you'll see that as a fairly common mistake. Another common mistake is that people will do this, I suppose, building a sphere of momentum spaces in momentum space, and they'll get up to the fact that the surface of the sphere is proportional to the frequency squared. But when they come down to it, they will write the surface is equal to the frequency cubed. Look, this is true. I see it lots of times. And the issue is that people at a certain point sort of fudge the answer, and you speak to them and they're very adamant that they're good at it and they understand it, and there's really, you can chase yourself in circles trying to explain it.